At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. And joining me is Dr. Julie Hamilton, licensed marriage and family therapist in Boca Raton, Florida. Dr. Hamilton has been involved in a legal challenge to a local ordinance that banned what is known as CT or conversion therapy. But in an earlier conversation, I was reminded that CT or conversion therapy really is a misleading term. So I'm going to let her explain more about that in just a little bit. But Dr. Hamilton, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Yeah, you know, I got to know you just a little while ago a little bit better, and I really enjoyed our conversation. And I thought you'd be a really good guest to talk about conversion therapy. And I know that's the wrong term, and you're going to explain why it's the wrong term in a little bit. But you've been involved in a legal battle in Florida that challenged a local ordinance that purported to protect minors who identified as LGBT, and particularly those minors that wanted to change their orientation or their behavior. But you saw this in a little different light. You saw this as a violation of your rights as a therapist and also as an American citizen of your First Amendment rights. And you were successful in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. The court ruled in your favor that there was a violation of your First Amendment rights, and there was also something called viewpoint discrimination, where the local ordinance was only allowing one view to be shared, and other views were being blocked out. And I'd like you to explain, tell us a little bit more about, I guess before we go much further, conversion therapy. Many people have heard about that, but in your conversation earlier, you were explaining why it wasn't an accurate term. Can you unpack that a little bit and tell us why it's not?
Yes. Conversion therapy is a term only used by activists to imply or to create the impression that something dangerous is happening in therapy. But really, what is being banned in some of these cases is just therapy, regular talk therapy. So I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I work with a wide range of issues. I help with marriage therapy, family counseling, and individual issues, including helping people with unwanted homosexual attractions. And I work the same way with everyone. It's just simply therapy. It's talk therapy. I talk with people about their struggles. I talk with people about what's going on in their lives, looking for root issues and so forth. And so to use the term conversion therapy implies that there's this procedure or practice that's being done that is unique and is harmful. And really, that's just not the case. It's simply therapy. That's all it is.
No, that's good. And that helps us to better understand. But just that those who are opposed to really any position or any perspective that differs from LGBT identity and embracing that as a that you're born this way, that you shouldn't change it, that it's harmful. I want us to talk a little bit about some of those myths that are out there, because this is related to the terminology that's being used. But what are some of the myths when we talk about LGBT identities?
Yes. There are some foundational myths that really the LGBT movement has been built on. And unfortunately, when we build a movement on myths, it's very harmful to many people. So some of those myths are, number one, that people are simply born homosexual. So we know from research that that is not the case. And we know that there are many factors that can contribute to a person having same-sex attractions. It's not a choice. Certainly people don't choose their attractions, but they're also not born that way. And that myth is harmful to people who find themselves having attractions and don't want those attractions. And then they're told that's how you were born that way. You have no other option. It's very devastating to many people to be told that they were born this way and they have no other option.
Julie, could I jump in? I remember back in the early 90s, there were studies that purported to say that there was a gene that might lead to somebody having a predisposition to homosexuality. I remember the Hamer study, I believe it was. And there were some other studies, other efforts in the scientific community to say, yeah, they are born that way. How are those studies still in those research projects? Do they still, are they credible or are they still relied upon to make that case?
No, they're not. In fact, in the 90s, there was a great deal of effort made within the scientific community to try to prove that homosexuality was biological. In fact, in 1998, there was a statement, the American Psychological Association had a statement on their website that it was mostly biological, that homosexuality was mostly biological. Well, in 2008, the American Psychological Association changed their statement, and they said that researchers have sought for a cause and were not able to find one. They had sought for a biological cause and were not able to find one. The gene studies were never replicated. The brain studies never proved anything. There were multiple studies that were done and they never proved it. And so in 2008, the APA changed their statement and they said, most scientists believe it is a combination of nature and nurture. Well, here's another thing. We know from the year 2000 on, the twin studies that have been done looking at this issue, we know from the twin studies that when one identical twin is homosexual, around 20% of the time or less is the other identical twin also homosexual. So we know from the twin studies, not only did they not find in all the gene and brain studies and so forth, not only did they not find a cause, but they also, we have seen through the twin studies that it can't be biological only, because we would see a much higher rate of both identical twins being gay if it were biological. So we know that there are factors that occur in a person's life that lead, again, not choice. People don't choose their attractions, but there are things that happen in their lives that can impact their attractions.
Yeah, that's good. So what are some of the other myths regarding LGBT identity? The born that way, that's a myth that even the science is walking back on. What are some of the other myths?
Yes, the next myth is that you can't change. So we hear that people are born this way and they cannot change. So you cannot change. If you're attracted to the same sex, you can't. That's unchangeable. We know that is not true. Even there's research done by Lisa Diamond has done some research that talks about the fluidity of attractions in both males and females. Now, she would also say that people can't choose to change. It just happens spontaneously. But if it happens spontaneously, there's no reason to believe that it can't happen when people are in therapy, dealing with underlying causes, dealing with roots. And in fact, we have research that shows, really, there was a review done of the last 100 years of data. So 100 years of case studies, research, and clinical reports that show that change does happen. It has been happening for years, and it is possible to change both in the area of behavior and attractions. Now, keep in mind, change varies among individuals. So change does not mean, and this is true for any issue, change does not mean the problem is gone and it's never going to return again. That's not true for depression, anxiety, marital problems, substance abuse. In any of these types of topics that we deal with in therapy, we know that people can change to varying degrees. And that doesn't mean they'll never experience their struggle again. It may come back at various times. They have, you know, there are all different outcomes in therapy, including having tools to know how to deal with struggles people face. So change doesn't mean, you know, it never comes back or doesn't exist at all.
You know, Julie, that's a really good point. I'm thinking of an opinion piece that came out in one of Kentucky's newspapers last year that was signed by former homosexuals or homosexuals who left that lifestyle, but then they went back to it. And I'm thinking John Polk, who was with Focus on the Family. I think Alan Chambers was on there. A list of the who's who in the ex-gay world. And they've been in the lifestyle, they left it, and then they went back. And they were saying, look, we were forced or we were coerced or we really, our deepest identity was homosexual. And they're making a very compelling case that you really can't change. And that argument has gotten a lot of traction. How would you, I think you've already kind of responded to that, but can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Absolutely. Yes. Those arguments really don't hold water, because with any issue that people face in life, there are going to be some people who move forward and continue to move forward. And there are going to be other people who move forward and then change their mind or change course. So let's think of addictions, for example. There are many people that have overcome alcoholism or other forms of substance abuse, and they have continued to walk in sobriety. And there are others who fall back. But we don't say, let's shut down all the treatment programs around the country because there are people who fall back. That's just not the case. Now, here's the other thing. You mentioned John Polk. With every story of someone who has fallen away or chosen to go to embrace their attractions, there are many, many more stories of people who haven't gone back. So John Polk was married to Ann Polk. She also came out of a gay background. She was a lesbian. Ann Polk is still walking in what she would call it, walking in freedom from homosexuality. And she's leading a national ministry. And so there are many people who have not, who say that they have still experienced change in their lives, and they're living a life far different from what they used to live. And they're happy about that.
Very good. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matter with Dr. Julie Hamilton. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist in Boca Raton, Florida. And Julie, you talked about two of the myths, born that way, that you can't change. And what is the third myth that that is there regarding LGBT identity?
Yes, the third myth is that attempting to change is harmful. And that's the one we're hearing the most. Most, you know, researchers have abandoned the myth that people are born gay, but now the American, you know, the public believes that, even though researchers realize it's not true. But the new one is that, or the one we're hearing the most about now, is that attempting to change is harmful. So we hear that if people seek out therapy to want to move beyond their attractions, then they end up more suicidal. That's the big one that we're hearing the most.
Yeah, and that's a good pivot to this therapy ban, which is often known as conversion therapy, not the right term, or sexual orientation change therapy, but you like to just say therapy. And there is a movement afoot in Kentucky. There's a movement afoot across the country to ban certain types of therapy that would help minor children leave that orientation. And I'm curious, Julie, have you ever seen a bill introduced that would, or a piece of legislation or an ordinance that would prohibit you from working with a certain category of people? Because this is what we're talking about. We're talking about minors who do desire to change. And this bill that you challenged in Boca Raton specifically targeted you, and it targeted your ability to offer therapy to these minors. Have you ever seen anything like this affecting your field?
Yes, that's exactly what we see. These bans, whether they be ordinances or statewide bans, that are saying at the surface level, they sound like they are banning a particular practice. They make it sound like there is this thing called conversion therapy that's happening that's harmful and it needs to be stopped. You realize they're not banning a particular practice. As I said, I'm a therapist. I do the same thing with all my clients. It's not a way of practicing that they're banning. What they are banning is they're banning a population of people, that is, those people who do not want to embrace a gay identity, those people who have homosexual attractions and don't want to act on them. They are embracing that particular population of people, as well as the goal that those people have of changing. And by the way, these bans also include banning minors who are confused about their gender, banning them from getting professional help to be secure and content with their own biological sex. So that includes, so in these ordinances and in these statewide bans, they actually say that you, as a therapist, I, as a therapist, could help a minor become the opposite sex, but the therapist is not allowed to help the minor be content and happy with who they are in their own biological sex, in their own gender. It truly is unbelievable. I do want to go back. I don't want to forget to mention how the claims that therapy caused suicide, how we know those are not founded in research at some
point. Julie, could you hold that thought? We're up on a hard break right now, but I do want to come back to that question of suicide. It's a compelling argument that the other side makes that if you try to change a minor who identifies as LGBT, you could be contributing to more shame, more hurt, and possibly lead to suicide. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Julie Hamilton in just a moment.
Growing up as a child, who did you turn to whenever you had a crisis? Who was your source of strength? Who held you in the darkest situations and became your beacon of light? Most of us will recall the love of our parents, our grandparents, our family. But the harsh reality today is that there are many who face the dark places of life totally alone. Since 1869, the mission and the ministry of Sunrise Children's Services has been to help children in crisis. That need grows every day in Kentucky. Everyone with a passion for children can join us in giving hope to children in need. To learn more, just visit sunrise.org or call 1-800-456-1386. Matthew 25:40 tells us, "The king will reply, 'Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you did for me.' Now's the time to be a child's source of strength. Come help us at Sunrise Children's Services."
Welcome back to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center, here with Dr. Julie Hamilton, a licensed marriage and family therapist out of Boca Raton, Florida. And Dr. Hamilton, just before the break, we were talking about some of the myths that come along in this area of LGBT identity. And one is born that way. The other was is can't change. And the third is that it's harmful to try to change somebody. And that argument has really gained a foothold here, where if you try to change somebody, you're just adding to shame. You're denying their personhood. You could be even leading to suicide. And that's a compelling argument with a lot of people. So there was an article in the Louisville Courier Journal back about a year or so ago, where they refer to a national survey conducted by the Trevor Project, and they found that 42% of LGBTQ youth who underwent their term conversion therapy reported a suicide attempt in the past year, more than twice the rate of their LGBTQ peers who did not go through the practice. Should we be concerned about therapy that might contribute to a higher suicide rate?
No, that is not what we should be concerned about. What we should be concerned about is taking therapy away from people who are already suicidal. So let me explain what they are saying in claims like that. And by the way, the Trevor Project, that is not actually a research study, but that's a biased survey. But what they are saying is that the people in therapy are more suicidal than the people who are not in therapy. So they are falsely concluding, therefore, therapy made them suicidal. But in actuality, all they are really able to say is these people that we talked to who were in therapy were suicidal, and the ones that weren't in therapy weren't as suicidal. It's possible that they are more suicidal. The ones in therapy are actually in therapy because they were more suicidal to begin with. So I want to tell you about a study that just came out last summer, because the Trevor Project, that's not research, but I will tell you about a research study that came out last summer where they claimed therapy causes people to be suicidal. And it was the same tactic that is being used in these Trevor Project claims. Basically, they were asking people, have you ever been in therapy? Have you ever, there were four questions about suicide, thought about, planned, intended, or attempted suicide. And so they asked these questions. And the researchers published a report that the people in therapy were more suicidal than the people who weren't in therapy. And therefore, therapy causes suicide. There are others who have analyzed this data and looked closer at the research. And what they found is that in this study, the researchers actually knew when the clients were suicidal and when they attempted therapy, even though they did not report this. And what they found in analyzing this data is the clients were suicidal before therapy. And after therapy, their suicidal rates went down, especially in the category of those who attempted. Can you believe they are using a study to claim therapy causes suicide? And that very same study proves therapy reduces suicide attempts. Wow. So it is a true misrepresentation of the literature. The literature proves the opposite. Therapy helps.
Julie, that's really, I'm glad you shared that, but why in the world are we not hearing your perspective on this? Because we're hearing the other argument ad nauseum. But what you shared is actually true science. It's factual. It's truthful. This is the first time I've heard this, not aware of this, and I considered myself fairly knowledgeable in this area, but I guess not. So why aren't we hearing more of this perspective?
Yes. Sadly, because we live in a cancel culture, if you are going to share information that isn't popular, your voice is not heard. But I can send you a report, a breakdown of that study that was done in a scientific way. And you can have that available to make, you know, available however you'd like. But you're right. People are not being told this because it isn't popular. Unfortunately, the three myths that you're born gay, can't change, and change is harmful are the dominant message in our culture, sadly.
Julie, I'd like us to unpack therapy and what's known as conversion therapy. is it shaming? Is this something where you're contributing to lower self-esteem, lower self-image? Is this hurtful? Because the picture that's painted of this is that it's a demeaning, hurtful, unhelpful. You're forcing, I'm throwing a lot of stuff out there, but you're forcing this on young people. Is that the right picture of what's going on in the therapist's counseling session?
Right. It's the exact opposite, really. So professional licensed therapists, and by the way, these are the groups that are targeted by the bans you're talking about, the bans on therapy. It's only targeting licensed therapists. So licensed therapists are trained to, in fact, one of the basic counseling skills 101 is all about being a good listener, being non-judgmental, being empathetic, putting yourself in the other person's shoes, being unbiased. And so therapists are trained to be good listeners and to be warm and to be caring and compassionate. They're usually a lot of people are in the therapy field because they're compassionate in the first place. And so therapy is about helping people with what they identify as the problems in their lives, with the goals they set for themselves. And therapists come alongside people. Oftentimes people come into therapy with shame and self-hatred, and therapists help clients to move past that shame and to begin to embrace who they are, who God designed them to be, and to come to terms with liking themselves and being the fullest, you know, living to the fullest potential that they have. And so therapists help clients. In fact, studies have shown that even for clients who did not experience a huge shift in their attractions, even those clients, many of them have reported, though they didn't, for the ones that have not experienced change in attractions to a great degree, many of those clients report greater self-esteem, greater confidence in themselves, less depression, less anxiety, so better overall. And that is what we see. That's the goal of therapy, is to help people, not to hurt people.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good to hear from you as a licensed therapist. I recall a couple of years ago, there was a movie produced in Hollywood called Boy Erased, and it painted a picture of abuse, of shaming, of just a terrible situation. And this has been referred to by a couple of legislators here in Kentucky. Can you speak to that? Does that paint an accurate picture of CT or therapy?
Not one single bit. So that movie was based on a book. The movie was an exaggerated form of the book. Many of the things in the movie were not actually in the book, but that was an experience. That book was written about an experience that someone had at a residential program. And by the way, I don't know of any residential programs that exist today, but even if they do exist, the bill that is being talked about at the state level in Kentucky would not have anything to do with residential programs. These bills are designed to shut down licensed therapists. Well, licensed therapists aren't doing things that are depicted in that movie. And if they are, then there are methods in place to report those therapists if they are doing unethical things in their offices. Licensed therapists are usually talking to their clients and nothing more. And if the conversations are hurtful or harmful, then those therapists can be reported to the licensing boards. But having a ban on therapy because of harm done, alleged harm done in a residential program that is no longer in business, that ban will not do anything about that residential program. It will only shut down licensed therapists and force people to get help from unlicensed professionals.
That's interesting that you point that out. That's an important point that our legislators need to understand as well. We're running out of time here, but I do want to get in another question or two. Kentucky State Representative Kim Banta sponsored a bill this session called House Bill 19. It bans what she's calling conversion therapy. And she wrote an opinion piece, and this is what she says, Julie. What this bill does is to protect families from predatory therapists who would seek financial gain with false hope. It protects the safety and well-being of Kentucky's children. Are there, and that's a lot of loaded language, a lot of buzzwords in there, but are there any documented cases of predatory therapists, using her term, or therapists using it for financial gain?
Right. That's interesting. So first of all, therapists can't force their will on their clients. So therapists are not predatory. We have a saying, it's that clients have the right to self-determination. Clients, in other words, have the right to determine the goals for their lives. And therapists are to support clients in their goals and help them achieve their goals to whatever degree they are able to do that. And as far as your other question about...
documented cases of this happening?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. When my state, when counties and cities in my state were considering bans, there was someone who did an inquiry with the Department of Health to find out how many complaints actually were being lodged against therapists. We're hearing about all this harm that's being done. So how many? And they found out that there were zero complaints lodged against therapists. If therapists are harming their clients, then clients can report that, and investigations can be done, and licenses can be pulled from therapists that are doing unethical practices. But in the state of Florida, there were zero reports of harm being done in therapy offices.
That really gives us some perspective as to whether or not this is really needed or whether it's really happening. And obviously, in your case, it's not. I'd like to look into Kentucky to see if there are any documented cases here of abuse. But as you say, there's already laws that protect clients, laws that have standards for therapists. And anyways, Dr. Hamilton, it has been so good for you to join us and to bring light into this onto this issue. I wish we had more time, but we are out of time. I do appreciate all you're doing on this issue. Thank you for spending some time with us. God bless you, and you keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. God bless you, too.